You are listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast, where we aim to dispel the myths, debunk the stories, and help people better understand the role of the doula in the 21st century. I am your host, Sophie Brigstock, owner of Nurturing Birth and course facilitator, and I invite you to grab a cuppa, pop on your headphones, and listen in as I chat to doulas, birth keepers, and nurturing birth friends about all things perinatal.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining me today on the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. Today, I am beyond thrilled because I have not one but two guests with me. One, my very, very dear friend, Helen Trenchard, and Renna, who was her surrogate. And today's conversation is going to be all around surrogacy. So a very, very warm welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
So as you probably all know listening, I love to give people the opportunity to introduce themselves. So Renna, I'm going to come to you first. Tell us a little bit more about you and how you ended up doing this extraordinary role of being a surrogate.
So it's really lovely to meet you, and thank you for having me here. So I have three children of my own. I'm married, and we've got a boy and two girls, and we had our struggles initially in our first pregnancy. Unfortunately, we had a loss, so we had a slight teeny tiny insight into what it might be like to struggle to conceive. And then fast forward quite a few years, I had my youngest in 2015, and at the same time my sister was really struggling. Really struggling to conceive and was having numerous losses. And the thought entered my mind, well, this is my sister. Might she need my help? I wasn't sure. We had that conversation, and then she fell pregnant, which was incredible, amazing. She's now got two boys. But the thought never really left me, that thought of, I've got three children through luck, nothing more. And what about those people that can't have children for whatever reason? So I initially explored egg donation, and I went down the egg donor route, and I donated my eggs. It's called anonymous, but it's actually ID release. So the children can have information later on in life. Donated with an organization, and three little girls were born through that. And that was incredible. And I'll always be so proud of what I did. But it did feel like there was something missing. I felt that I really would have liked to have known them. So a friend of mine said, oh, well, have you heard of Surrogacy UK? And they do known egg donation there. Maybe you could look into that. So I applied, and Alex and I went to our first conference, and that was really it, really. That was in 2018. So we've been part of the organisation now for 5 years.
Wow. So it started off initially with Surrogacy UK being that you would be an egg donor, and then it turned into very much more than that.
Yeah, it turned very much more into that. So I had my first surrogate baby in 2020. Never expected to have a lockdown birth, but we did. That was via something called straight surrogacy. So that was using my own eggs. So I was the couple's known egg donor, as well as their surrogate, and their daughter was born in 2020. And we met Helen and Dan whilst we were in the organisation, and then and had Robin 5 months ago. But I'm actually now, I've kind of come full circle a little bit, because I'm now getting to know a third couple for known egg donation.
Wow. Oh my goodness. There's so much to dive into here. And I want to hear from Helen. So Helen, tell us a little bit about you before we dive further into this whole surrogacy conversation.
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much for having us on, Sophie. This is great.
You are very welcome.
So the most important thing for this conversation is that I am mum to Robin, who is 20 weeks old today.
Amazing.
It's 20 weeks, Renna. It's 20 weeks. At 20 long weeks. Dan and I decided to become members of Surrogacy UK, having been told that we would not be able to, I would not be able to carry my own children. Following a huge operation to remove fibroids that had led to miscarriage in the past, my womb was unfortunately left damaged, and I have something called Asherman's syndrome. it's a scarring of the womb lining, which is more common than people realize. And I have severe Asherman syndrome. And after 4 operations to try and remove the scarring kept growing back. So it wasn't possible for an embryo to implant. But we had embryos in the freezer. And so surrogacy was an option for us. And after a lot of deep breaths and deep thought, we started to get involved in the organization through the pandemic and join online socials and put our paperwork in, et cetera. I'm sure Rena can speak at length about the organization and how it works, because it's not the only way to form a surrogacy team here in the UK. Surrogacy UK was a place that focused on friendship. So surrogacy teams, like the one between my family and Rena's family, are formed through friendship. And we were keen that if we were, if we were lucky enough to have a baby, we would want our surrogate to be in their lives, because it's important to us that our child knows where he came from. You know, we think that there are better outcomes for children where they really have deep roots. And it's an unusual way in which he's come into the world. The reason I'm here and the reason I've met Rena is because we took a deep breath and joined a surrogacy organization.
Wow. So my understanding is there was this huge, long, complex history to get to a point where you chose to join Surrogacy UK. Tell me a little bit more, Helen. What did you know? What did you think about surrogacy before you went down that route? What were your, did you have preconceived ideas of what it would be, or?
Great question. Yeah, great question. So I should introduce the other person that's important to us here, which is my husband, Dan.
Yeah.
Dan and I didn't want to consider surrogacy because we wanted to have our own child, right? We used to think of it as, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
You can swear on this podcast.
We used to talk about surrogacy as shitty option B. That's genuinely how we considered it, because surrogacy would mean that we'd failed. I'm putting that in inverted commas. Surrogacy would mean that, you know, that the thing that he and I had worked hardest on in our whole lives and for the longest time that had involved, you know, I mean, I almost died after the operation. I needed a blood transfusion. You know, we'd put blood, sweat and tears into this journey, and surrogacy would mean that we had not achieved our dream.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't an instant thing. When we were told, it took us like a full year. We both took time away from work. We both, you know, really kind of attended to our mental health in that time. And we took a deep breath before sort of setting out on a surrogacy journey, because in fairness, I think I still had a lot of shame about my infertility. And the surrogacy world, for Surrogacy UK, this organization, is about bringing people together through social situations. So you have to like show up on a Zoom call or in a pub or at a conference, and you have to stand in the room. And as the woman in a couple, we are in the organization called Intended Parents, and female intended parents, the problem is with me, right? It's very obvious that I'm there because there's some kind of, you know, medical issue. And I was ashamed about it. There was a big sort of mental barrier around joining any kind of, you know, surrogacy, anything. But just like Rena and Alex, we went to our first conference and things started to change. It was 600 people in a ballroom in Leicestershire on our sixth wedding anniversary in 2019.
Way to go, Helen. Way to go. You know how to celebrate.
And it was so overwhelming and so inspiring. And I now know that Rena and Alex were there giving good news to their first team.
Wow.
At the same event, but we didn't meet. But we met lovely people. We felt very welcome. And I finally felt like I was in the right place.
Yeah.
You know, there was an intended mother's session. I was surrounded by women who were post IVF or IVF wasn't an option. And I had met no one like that in my life. I had felt so lonely. And so for us, as we took those deep breaths to go into surrogacy and hope to one day be invited into a get to know period by a surrogate and her family, I thought that even if that never happened, we would meet loads of couples like us who have been through the mill. And I did. And I met couples with much sadder stories than ours. And I met people who understood the kind of crap we've been through, and were brave enough and kind of pragmatic enough to be like, it's about the family, not about how you get there. But it was a big leap for me. In some ways, it still is. You know, like I go to baby groups with my baby and people ask how I'm doing and how I've recovered. And I have to decide whether to kind of come out or not, because it obviously entails a much longer conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. My whole heart hurts when I hear you talking about shame. And, you know, as a doula, I have worked with families in so many complex situations and witnessed so many, and a lot of my clients were clients who had very long and challenging fertility journeys, and I can really relate to that feeling from what they shared of the shame and the how complex it can be and the different slant that puts on a pregnancy. You know, it's not like go and have a quickie behind the bike sheds, is it, and going, oh crap, I'm pregnant. So yeah, I really, really hear that. I'm really intrigued by this whole kind of, it feels a bit like dating, you know, going to Surrogacy UK. In my mind, I've got this kind of like, we're on a speed dating thing. And, you know, Helen, you're talking about, you know, standing there. I've got this sense of like needing people to like me and choose me. And this whole kind of, tell me, what the hell is a get to know period?
Do you want me to take this, Helen?
Go on, Rena. Go on.
So yeah, I mean, when we went to our first conference, I think, you know, and other people have said, I sat there thinking, am I in a cult? What is going on? What is happening in this room? But it's not until you get into the organisation that you realise actually what it's all about. So because Surrogacy UK, as Helen said, is built on friendship.
I love that.
But much more than that, it's what comes from that friendship. So friendship looks different, doesn't it, to different people? You know, Some of us see our friends once a year. We might see them every week. So it's about having that trust. I think that's the biggest thing of all. And you can only get that by becoming friends with somebody. Any relationship we have in life has to come from us getting to know them and trusting them and having that communication. So the way Surrogacy UK work is that there's no matching. Nobody is told, Rena, I think you would get on really well with Helen. It's none of that. It's all about, we facilitate opportunities. Mm. So every weekend there is a social somewhere in the UK, as Helen said.
Or four or nine. There's loads and loads every weekend.
Yeah, wow. Loads. Yeah, and online ones and all sorts. That's since COVID, actually. And we have our members host those, you know, without our amazing volunteers who will host these socials, they wouldn't exist. And people go to those socials, intended parents, surrogates, but, you know, you don't turn up at a social and you're wearing a badge saying, you know, I'm a surrogate, or, you know, wearing a badge saying I'm an intended parent. Just a room full of people to talk. And you have opportunities there to make connections. And as Helen said, it might be with another intended parent, or for me, I've made some wonderful friends with other surrogates, and you get to know people at those socials. And there's also a members hub that once you become an actual member of the organization, you can communicate via that. And a get to know is pretty much exactly what it says. The surrogate is the one that makes the choice. So we would let the lovely Dawn know in the organization that we would like to get to know a couple. So Alex and I had met Helen and Dan and met them a few times, i.e. stalked them, and and really, really liked them, and thought that there's definitely a connection there. We'd been chatting on the members hub, and we make the call, and then it's called the get to know. So it's a minimum of 3 months, but you can absolutely extend it if you want. And in that time, you do what you would do with any friendship, any relationship. You get to know each other, coming over here for some food. We were going to theirs, meeting up in the park, any opportunities that you can to form this friendship. And then at the end of the 3 months, you can make your decision at that point. Do you want to progress and actually become a team and go for an agreement session? Or do you want to end the get to know? So there's never a, we are offering to help. It's, we'd like to get to know. And then if that then turns into something more, then you can then take it further. So the one thing within the organisation is nothing is legal. There's nothing that you can enforce. Mm-hmm. But we have an agreement within the organisation that is quite a number of pages long. And we talk about everything and anything in that. The really lovely things, but also the really, really tough things that you need to talk about when you're going down this route. And that's one thing that we ask that every person who is in the organisation, they have to have that agreement that's facilitated by an advisor before you can move on to trying to conceive. Because what we want to do is to make sure that everyone is on the same page. Everyone understands exactly what is going to happen. And whilst the agreement is lovely because you're announcing your team, everyone knows that you're moving forward in your journey, the agreement advisor has a really big role. Because they're making sure that everybody is clear about where they're going with this and what everyone's intentions are. So it's really important that you've got that every step of the way.
So it sounds like there are very clear boundaries to the process of getting to know each other. And I'd love to bring in, you know, to talk about your partners in all of this.
Yeah.
And your children as well, Renna, like, you know, you introduced and said you had three children. So in that getting to know period, like how does that work when you've got quite a large family?
Yes, definitely. And when we first joined, my youngest was only 2.5.
Wow.
And she's 7.5 now. So when we wrote our profile, because surrogates write profiles about their family. So when we make that offer, the intended parents can have a read and make sure actually, are we the right person for them? So when I wrote my profile, I wanted to make it really clear that we're a package. It's me, my husband and our three children who are 100% a part of this. But it's my dream. It's something I've always wanted to do. And if I'm really honest, then Alex, my husband, and our three children are along for that journey. Mm. And so it's really important for us that they feel really included and a part of it. And they have a wonderful relationship with the first couple that we helped, and their daughter, who is now 3, that my children love to see. And then the same for Helen and Dan and Robin, who, you know, my children just love to see as well. So it's just about making sure that they do feel included, and they're also really aware that this is not an extension of, you know, of our family unit. And what Helen said about children knowing their story, mm-hmm. a child that's born through surrogacy, I also think it's really important for the children of surrogates that they understand and they're fully aware of what this means, and being really open and honest. And we've never kept any secrets. We're always very proud of what we've done, and I think it's really important that children are a part of that.
Yeah.
So Sophie, today you're meeting 2 members of our team, but yes, there were originally 7, and with Robin now there's 8. Like that's the way we've always thought about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a team name. We have team T-shirts. I mean. We're a full team.
Yeah.
I love it. So I'd love to hear from you, Helen. What was your experience of that getting to know period? And then this agreement, I like, it sounds this big momentous moment where you go to agreement. Tell me from your perspective.
So for the intended parents in the community, of which there are hundreds and hundreds, the moment that everyone remembers is when you get the call, capital T, capital C, which is when Dawn from Surrogacy UK calls you up and says, one of our surrogates would like to get to know you. For us, it wasn't Dawn, because Dawn had just given birth.
Dare she?
That was the amazing chief exec instead. Her name is Sarah. And it felt like the best news we'd ever, ever had. It almost felt better than the positive pregnancy lines we'd had in the past. It felt like hope and joy and excitement, because we were already starting to, you know, become friends with Renna and Alex and the kids. And so, and also Renna speaks brilliantly about Surrogacy UK because she's a trustee of the organization, and Alex is a freelancer for them. And so it was almost like being asked out by celebrities. Everybody knows who they are. And so it was just the most wonderful people at the most wonderful time offering a glimmer of something that was our wildest dreams. Like I went to, it was like 8:30 in the morning, the call, and then I got on a Zoom call 9 a.m. like started my working day, and someone said, "Morning." Oh, this is a Monday morning, I should say as well. "Morning, Helen, how are you?" And I burst into tears. Like, I could not keep it together. Like, the whole day I was just completely, I mean, as if you've been received a marriage proposal before breakfast.
I love it. I love it.
Like, giddy, you know, like, well, that's how I felt anyway.
Yeah, and the same thing from my side of it as well. You know, when we made that decision to make the call, you know, when a surrogate makes that decision, we're really aware that the parents could say no. You know, the parents to be, I might not have been the right surrogate for Helen and Dan, and I had to bear that in mind. And so we do spend a lot of time thinking and deciding, and okay, yes, you know, we're going to make the offer. So I knew that Sarah was going to make a call on Monday morning, and you know, it's that nervous, you know, my stomach was flipping, I was thinking, oh my god, they're going to be getting the call soon. And then it was, you know, 8:30 in the morning, and I suddenly had this FaceTime from these massive smiles, and I was in my office, and I'm a teacher, and I was about to start my day, and it was just wonderful to know that they had said yes, and we were going to actually start getting to know each other, which was just incredible.
Yeah. Amazing. Go on, tell me more about the agreement side of things, because then you're moving forwards and you're into what I'm assuming is quite a medicalized process.
Okay, yeah, good question. So Surrogacy UK has been going for 20 years, and I would say the agreement form, which is about 24 pages long, is the accumulation. It's a benefit when you remember to receive the agreement. And it's an accumulation of all the knowledge, it feels like, Rena can tell me if I'm wrong, but all the knowledge that SUK has accumulated over those years. You know, so all the things that can go right and wrong all the way through the process of getting to know, trying to conceive, birth, potential losses, what happens, you know, who holds the baby first, who announces the pregnancy. I mean, and those are some of the nicer things to talk about, right? There are some kind of things to talk about. Things like, you know, what kind of tests would we be doing if Rena was to become pregnant? You know, like pre-birth tests on the baby. And so that, at the time, the agreement felt like, it's a bit of a hard read going through the form, but I and Dan and I were attracted to SUK because it was putting sort of governance and rules around something that can be quite informal outside of an organization like SUK. Like, you know, it's that agreement is there for ethical, transparent, legal surrogacy, right? To make sure that we're doing everything right. And so I was reassured, to be honest. I was really reassured. And also, I find it morally binding. I know that, it can't be legally binding in this country, but that Rena and Alex were having serious conversations, obviously peppered with humour, because that's our friendship. But we were having serious conversations, and these two people were sitting down in a serious way, and they were taking it seriously as well, because as joyful as it was, this is really big stuff.
Massive undertaking, isn't it? You know, any pregnancy, bringing any baby into the world, and you've got what I'm beginning to see, kind of how much thought goes into it. And you know, I think we've probably all heard of, you know, some more morally dubious types of surrogacy arrangement around the world. So I love that all of that is in place with Surrogacy UK. It sounds really healthy and transparent and boundaried.
Absolutely. Yeah. And commercial surrogacy isn't legal here in the UK. And so Dan and I made sure that Ren and Alex were not out of pocket. We paid for their expenses. That's another thing that's sort of done quite cleverly through Surrogacy UK, to make sure that kind of money conversations don't get in the way of a friendship.
Yeah.
I would say that I felt supported at every stage by the organisation and was quite relieved most of the time that we had done it that way.
Amazing. Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit. You've done all of your agreements and everything. Then what happens? Because you were saying, Helen, earlier that you had some embryos in a freezer.
You did. And Helen will say at this point, in this whole situation, they always used to say, Renna's 5 steps in front of everyone else. Because I haven't been through what Helen and Dan have been through. my journey to parenthood didn't come with the difficulties that Helen and Dan did. Yes, we had a loss and that was absolutely devastating for us. But then our road to parenthood after that point was straightforward. Mm. And so we would always say, you know, I would always be those five steps forward, you know, so we'd laugh. I was the one that broached. So, you know, after 3 months, what do we think about becoming a team? You know, and they were like, oh, okay. And, you know, and so I think for me, I was, you know, I was always very positive, not necessarily, we never know what the outcome's going to be. Of course, it's a bit of a lottery, isn't it, IVF? But I was always really positive and hopeful about next steps. And it's not that Helen and Dan weren't, but I think they'd only ever experienced bad news. They'd only ever been in situations where they were told, this isn't going to work, or that hasn't worked. And so for them, it was, I hope that I was that support behind them to say, we've got this, you know, we're going to give this our very best go, but we're going to do it as a team.
Renna and Alex gave us belief. We used to say that they were the when people and we were the if people. So Renna and Alex would say, when your parents and when there's a baby, and we would say if, because we didn't want to, you know, we'd had our hearts broken so many times before. I mean, practically speaking, we introduced Renna to our clinic. Our embryos were in storage at Guy's and St Thomas's in London, and we wanted to make sure that Renna and Alex felt really comfortable in the clinic. And so they met the specialist and we had meetings, and it went really well, and we were really taken care of by the team there.
They were brilliant. Yeah, they were great, and they were really open, I think, because I'd been a surrogate before. I think that reassured the clinic in that I knew what the process was. And they were really open about the fact that I really didn't want to be medicated, if at all possible, because we talk a lot to clinics about the fact that surrogates aren't going through IVF because they can't conceive. They're doing it because this is a way to help another person or a couple become parents. And so, yeah. They were really open to that, and I was willing to explore medication if needed, but I really wanted them to actually listen to what I had to say, and that, you know, maybe we could do this naturally. And in the end, we were able to. It was called mild IVF. So there were no injections or anything, but I did have additional progesterone.
Right.
At the point of the transfer, but it was all done using my own cycle. So it mimicked your own natural cycle, which is so clever. I think IVF is just incredible. And so I had to track my cycle and check to see when I was going to ovulate and let the clinic know. And then they would book us in for a transfer 6 days later.
You were tracking your cycle in our get to know period because you're a kid.
Oh, month one. Surrogates
five
do.
Steps ahead. Dragon is steps ahead. Yeah.
100 steps ahead. And I must admit, surrogates are known to, you know, we on sticks a lot. You yeah. know, we want to check our cycle. And I think as well, it's that reassurance for us. Okay, this is working okay. You know, we can pinpoint our cycle. So yeah, I've been tracking my cycle for 3 months. So when it came time for transfers, I knew my cycle. I knew yeah. when about I would ovulate. But the transfer for Robin, my cycle decided to go, woohoo, we're going to mix it up a little bit. So it was a bit later than we anticipated. But yes, it's tracking cycles are a surrogate's favourite thing to do.
Yeah. And I'm just intrigued to know kind of how much involvement Helen, you and Dan had with the pregnancy. I mean, obviously you were great friends by that point, but, you know, were you at clinic or how does that all work?
And we were at every possible appointment that we could be at.
Amazing.
We did a lot. We clocked a lot of miles on the up to Birmingham. Dan got a speeding ticket because we went so many times up and down, he ended up getting a speeding ticket. So apart from midwife appointments that were very short and taking Renna's bloods, we were at every other appointment. So that's the original clinic appointments, you know, down in London. And then, you know, when Renna was pregnant, her, you know, the NHS took over in her local area. And we were there for all the scans, of which there were quite a few towards the end. They used to like to scan Renna quite a bit. Baby Robin was absolutely fine all the way along. In terms of also how we were involved, Renna bought belly buds so that we could record, ended up recording music. So I used to sing like like Christmas songs at Christmas and different things, and then Renna would play them to the belly, so you couldn't hear them in the room, but you can hear them like.
I love that, because Helen and I know each other as from singing together. So I love that.
Yeah. It was just such a nice way for Helen and Dan to feel that little bit more connected, because whilst, you know, you're loving as a surrogate what you're doing and you feel, you know, so happy and proud, it is, you know, there is an element of it being bittersweet.
Yes.
You know, Robin would kick or something would happen, and I would sometimes get quite emotional thinking, oh, this should be Helen. But we always said, but, you know, this was the way that Helen and Dan were going to become parents. And I think that I wanted to find a way to keep them included. And actually, Helen and Dan would even have come to the 10-minute appointments, but it was me that was saying, guys, you do not have to come.
Stop showing up.
You don't have to come for the midwife to check my urine. It's, you know, but they wanted to be there. They never wanted to leave me by myself. And actually, one person I haven't mentioned who also came to every single appointment was my husband.
Yeah,
he was there all the time, all the scans. And, you know, because he was going to be my birthing partner, he was my advocate. So he, you know, he came along to everything and anything that he could. But even he left me alone for the 10-minute midwife appointment. So
well, your husband, Alex, was essential to this team, yes. I would say.
Yeah. The more you all talk, the more I'm getting this sense of just such a connected, strong team, you know, all supporting each other. And I suppose, you know, as a doula, I'm sitting here thinking about the role that I play with parents who are pregnant, expecting to have babies, thinking about what do they want from the birth, what are their expectations around parenthood itself, etc. And Helen, that's a little bit different. That looks a bit different. You're talking, you've already shared about, you know, going to baby groups now, and like, how much would you share with people, you know, when they ask how you're recovering? Because it's a can of worms, isn't it, to start that whole conversation. So tell me a little bit more about how you prepared for birth and how you prepared for parenting.
Good question. And it's quite a hard question for me to answer, because Robin came at the end of a 9-year journey for us. And yeah. Sophie, you were my great friend through some of those years. So thank you. And so we didn't quite believe it. There's our friend Renna with a huge tummy.
Huge.
Pick names yet, guys. It's getting down to it. And we were still holding a space in our bodies for disaster. And I don't know if we ever said that out loud to you guys, but we really felt that. And it manifested in not really having a nursery put together in any guise. It manifested in not really having names together. And so the way we prepared for parenthood was making sure that Renna had everything she needed and really focusing on Renna and the family. Renna had quite a difficult third trimester, and it impacted every single member of her family and wider family and colleagues. And we wanted to pay attention to them. Mm. And so when Robin arrived, the shock we were feeling was, you know, exacerbated by that, I suppose. Mm. My friend Katie told me that pregnancy was half psychological. So, you know, getting ready, you know. So there were definitely things I had, you know, there were definitely kind of, you know, lots of conversations between Dan and I and kind of thinking about it. But I think, you know, surrogacy is quite rare in the UK. And I wonder if more could be, you know, spoken about around, like, you know, how intended mothers particularly prepare.
Yeah.
I felt very well supported by my friends in the community. Some of them are surrogates, some of them are intended parents, some of them further along on their journey, some further behind. But all of those people were just kind of thrilled for us. It's definitely like different. I mean, I've got nothing to compare it to, you know, I wasn't able to carry to term. So all I know is my experience, and my experience was my very good friend Renna was taking super good care of my baby, and I had to trust, not I trusted Renna, but I had to trust in kind of fate that everything would work out.
Yeah. So I suppose in this country, antenatal education tends to really be focused on heterosexual, middle-class, white couples. And, you know, there's a lot of statistical evidence that people outside of that demographic don't really feel like they're included. And I cannot imagine what it might feel like as intended parents to be in a room in an, you know, in an antenatal class, for example.
Yeah, really good question. So we did do an NCT class and we contacted NCT in advance and said, this is our situation. And they said, be completely welcome. We understand completely. There was another couple in the class that were a lesbian couple. And so they had also had conversations about, you know, is this inclusive? As a white middle-class woman, it was probably the first time in my life I ever had to call up and say, I have additional needs in this situation. Yeah. Can you meet them? And they were amazing. I mean, most of it was all about birth, which was really helpful so that we, you know, vaguely knew what was happening. Robin was born on the day of the final class where we were going to learn about, you know, baby washing and nappy changing. So we didn't quite get that. But I would say I was nervous, but our very first class was a Zoom call, which made it a bit easier. And then once I was kind of just hanging out with a load of really friendly pregnant women, I definitely had moments. Like, there is a grief that I experienced that will always be with me. Mm-hmm. And I feel it now, you know, when women are, you know, bonding over sharing their birth experiences or they're, you know, breastfeeding at a baby class. I feel that grief. But what I also have in my life is my amazing boy, my amazing friends, and this team and story we're so proud of that has been fantastically healing.
Yeah, yeah. And you and Dan were part of the birth, from what I understand. Robin decided to make rather a speedy entrance into the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'd said to Helen and Dan, I have fast labours. I'm very, very lucky. So 4 pregnancies before, 3 my own children, 1 Surrow baby, and my labours are very quick, you know, hour and a half thereabouts.
Blimey.
Yeah, so, you know,
I mean, doula's dream, I have to say. Or maybe not, because it might not actually arrive in time.
Well, with my first surrow baby, it was during lockdown. We actually had a private midwife in the end, so we could do it at home. And actually, my first surrow baby was born here. Not on the table, but in a pool here. So I'd said to Helen and Dan, you know, I do labour really quickly, so I'd want you to be close by. So the plan was that they were going to move up round about 39 weeks, because I always go at least 2 days over. My most has been 8 days. And so it came as a massive surprise to me on the Monday morning, my first day of mat leave, that my waters went.
37 weeks.
37 weeks, my waters
37
went.
Weeks. 37 weeks, wow.
37 weeks. So it was such a shock. And I thought then, oh my goodness me, what if I go into labour now? Because in previous experiences, it happens very quickly. So call Helen and Dan, who had packed the hospital bag the night before, thank goodness. Appeared very calm on the phone, but were probably screaming, and got in the car, and then nothing happened. So after 24 hours, our plans were to have Robin in a midwife unit. That was what we really wanted to do. We'd been, hadn't we, Helen, to see this beautiful new building. We were going to be in one room afterwards, Helen and Dan with their baby could be in the other. And we arrived and we were told that there was such a staff shortage that they couldn't open the midwife unit. And I think for me, that it straight away filled me with, but I've only ever laboured at home or in a midwife unit.
Yep.
And where's my water? That's my pain relief. What am I going to do? Never been induced before. I think I came to it feeling quite stressed, but obviously not wanting to try and project that too much on anybody else, because I wanted Helen and Dan to have as best experience as they could. And I know that their aim was for me to have a best experience.
Yeah.
So we were coming at it.
Neighbouring in like a really polite way. I'm getting this impression now. They're like, because like, you see, you want, honestly, all we wanted was for you just to have the safest and best birth that you wanted.
Absolutely. And so, but every step of the way, what I really liked about the hospital was they included us all. So when we went in the room and they said, look, you know, you're 2 centimetres. It's been over 24 hours. How do you feel about a pessary? Mm-hmm. And it was a conversation. We all looked at each other, and Helen and Dan and my husband were like, what do you want? And there might have been different decisions I might have made had it been my own baby. Mm-hmm. But I'm not risking anything for a surrogate pregnancy. And I don't regret taking the pessary at all. But I think I was very clear that if, you know, I didn't want Robin to get an infection, the waters had gone. I just thought, do you know what? I'm going to have the pessary. So I had the pessary. And when I say it was instant, I can't even describe it at all. And Helen and Dan were there. They were there, which must have been really hard, because whilst I'm quite silent in labour, I'm pretty sure my face read how I was feeling. It was intense. I'd never been induced. The pessary worked immediately. And Helen and Dan at one point wanted to give me and my husband some space and went to go get coffee. And when they left the room, I said to my husband, I feel like I might need to push. So there was that whole, oh, my goodness me, we're going to have to get them back in the room. And I kept thinking, this can't be the case. I'm 2 centimetres, to the point where I actually said to a midwife, I really think that I need to push. But because I think I've been quite silent, nobody really knew what was going on. And as Helen and Dan walked back into the room after having their coffee, I then turned to the midwife and said, something's going on. And she said, I think you might need to go and have a wee. And I never came out of the bathroom until after Robin was born. And it was a really surreal experience, because we know how it feels to be in pain. Everyone experiences some form of pain, whatever they've experienced in their life. And there's that pain of, oh my goodness me, you know, I'm obviously getting towards the, I thought I was going to have still quite a bit of pushing to do. And it was when I realized that actually his head was nearly out while I was on the toilet that I quickly dropped off the toilet, went onto all fours. Now, in hindsight, we talk about this, Alex and I, and Helen and Dan get really angry with us because we feel the guilt from it. But the only time I make noise is when I'm pushing. Mm. And I made what my husband said can only be described as a roar.
Yeah.
And my husband flew across the room into the bathroom that I was in by myself, but didn't at that point. His focus was, I need to get to Renner. And Helen and Dan didn't know what was happening. Mm-hmm. They didn't realise that that was a push noise. Because
the guttural roar, the birthing roar, yeah.
Absolutely. And so by the time my husband got in the room, Robin's head was out. And then as the midwife entered the room, then, you know, she caught him. And it was one of those experiences where Helen and Dan stood outside the room, and I'm sure she can say, Helen can tell you from her perspective, but I still, and will do, and know it's not my fault, but I do still feel guilty that they weren't present at that precise moment. I know that in the grand scheme of things, they met Robin when he was a minute old, but our plan was to have him all together in a room together, and babies have their own way of doing things,
don't they? Just, and also physiology, you know, I'm a massive I talk a lot about physiological birth and the way the body works, and it's so interesting how many people end up birthing in the smallest room, the bathroom or whatever, and taking themselves away and going into the body. And, you know, what I'm really hearing is this pressure from both of you, like, I want them both to have the perfect experience. And actually your body is doing something so powerful. My God, it just sounds like you were extraordinary, amazing, amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, and afterwards, you know, so Helen and Dan, then we open the door and the midwife calls out, congratulations. And then we always describe it as the weirdest conga line you've ever seen, where I'm coming out with Robin still attached behind with midwife, with my husband behind, and we're all going up to the bed. At this point, nobody knows if Robin's a boy or a girl. But I think the healing part of that, the fact that, okay, it wasn't the birth that I necessarily wanted myself. It was very quick. It was intense, but very quick. Helen and Dan weren't in the room at the time. However, the hours that we had together afterwards were really special, because we did feel, didn't we, Helen, quite robbed of the few weeks that we'd had lovely plans. We were going to go and have lunch. We were going to do some walks. I was going to be really overdue. And that was taken away from us. So I think those hours that we had post-birth were really lovely.
Yeah. So Helen, how, you know, not having been at a birth before, hearing those noises, it's all happened really, really, really quickly. Like, how was that for you?
Different, amazing, by the way.
I mean, extraordinary, yeah.
How was it for me? I, as you know, didn't believe that things would go our way in life. Mm. You know, like I've been hurt so many times. So that Robin arrived screaming his lungs off and just so healthy from the moment he arrived is an absolute dream come true. So that's what I mainly think about that experience. Genuinely, like, it hurts my heart a little bit that you've got this guilt, Renna, but I understand it's because you're a brilliant friend. This is getting emotional, isn't it, girls? The roar, I thought something was terribly wrong, and the speed at which Alex, her birth partner, ran into the bathroom without, like, he knew that the speed at which she had to do that, and all the way through he'd been kind of our sort of translator, like, she needs this, or this is what this means when Renna does that, and he'd just been absolutely brilliant about kind of, you know, interpreting everything. He just shot, and we backed away from the door. We backed away right to the other side because we thought, like, blue lights flashing, medical people needed to come. Like, we thought it was an emergency. We thought there was something terribly, wrong for Renna. Anyway, hearing Robin's cry made me think, oh my God, something really big has happened. but then until the midwife swung, the hospital doors swing open or in it, and so it was closing in onto Renna, and so they couldn't get her out of the bathroom, and so they figured out how to, like, fix the lock so that the door swung outwards. And the minute that happened, the midwife shouted congratulations to Dan and I, and that's when we knew that everything was fine. But it was probably about a minute when we didn't know what was going on. Renna, having just given birth, limps over to her own bed, like a single, you know, like what the Americans call gurneys, right? A single hospital bed. She has just given birth. She sits down. She budges up on her own single bed and pats the bed next to me, next to her, to say, sit down, Helen. And so I'm squished up on the bed with Renna. And the midwife asks Renna, would you like skin to skin? And Renna said, no, she wants skin to skin. The very first thing that happened was that I sat down and the midwife handed me Robin and he sat on my chest. And the photo that you've seen, Sophie, is of a selfie that Alex took at that point, because he had this presence of mind to, like, capture the moment. And so for you to, like, share your bed, bed after you've given birth, because you know what's, you know, you want, because you have the dream, right, to make us parents, and that was your dream coming true, but it was our dream coming true as well. And then they wanted to keep Robin in for observations, and so they kept Renna in as well, and we spent 12 hours in the same room together, all four of us. Alex went to do the school run and then came back again
with pizza, don't forget the pizza.
It was magic, and we're, like, FaceTiming family and all of us, you know, and just marveling at this little bundle. And Renna had a good nap in the middle of that.
Oh, I really did. I missed quite a lot of, like, the weighing bits and all of that, because I'm just conked out. But we were also really conscious in those 12 hours that, because it hadn't gone to plan and we didn't have the separate room, and the hospital had their own ideas about what they wanted. And I'm in more talks with the hospital about this, because they basically wouldn't let me leave until Robin left, which is not the case in most trusts. Once the surrogate is able to leave, the baby stays with the parents. But I, at that moment in time, I wasn't going to question that, because I just thought, do you know what? We're all really good friends. We can make this work. I was exhausted. And actually, now looking back, I really do value that time we had together.
Yeah.
I think if I'd have gone after a couple of hours, that would have been quite hard. And at about 10 o'clock in the evening, because we were there till midnight, I'd had a shower. It's the best shower after birth. Had a shower, had some pizza, and we actually walked to another empty delivery room because it was very quiet at that time. And just to give Helen and Dan that little bit of time, because as a surrogate, of course, we know we've got to be there in that moment to for your friends to become parents. But you also feel that you're in something that's really private, and it's actually a real honour to be present when two people are becoming parents.
Isn't it?
So, yeah. And so we love that. And it was just amazing to have those, that and actually having that lovely time, like snuggled up to Helen. We waited for quite a while, didn't we, Helen, for the cord to stop. And Helen and Dan were really intrigued and all of that. And because we are such good friends, there was nothing, there was no kind of anything to hide. There was no embarrassment for me. It was just, we're all in this space together. But it did feel nice to give them some time, just them, with Robin, to bond.
Yeah. I've got full body goosebumps. I feel very, very emotional talking to you both and hearing your story. And, this is having heard the story from Helen's perspective before. So I can't imagine what everyone listening to this is how they're feeling. And so inevitably there comes a time when you do go your separate ways. And Helen and Dan, you are now parents with an actual real baby in your hands. Like, how was that, going home and having Robin and him being real?
Yeah, good question. So in terms of separating, so we booked an Airbnb as we drove up the motorway in a blind panic after Renna had her waters had broken. So we had a little place to stay near to where they lived. And so we spent the whole of the next day together. When the midwife came to check Renna, midwife could check the baby as well on day one. So not only had she given birth, but she and her family hosted two brand new parents and a brand new baby for a 8-hour period. They fed us dinner, they gave us helpful parenting advice. I mean, that was very, very, very generous. And we know Renna's wider family. They came around to meet the baby. It was all really, really special. But yeah, the next day the Airbnb was booked by somebody else, so we had to go. I think maybe if it hadn't been, we wouldn't have gone. And parting from Renna and Alex and that gang was really, really hard. I mean, I would liken it to, you ever taken a trip with people that you didn't know very well and you all really bonded and you have to go back to your lives and you miss those people and that intense experience, don't you? Yeah. I would say the first few weeks, I mean, we're seeing each other this weekend, so I don't have to miss them that much. But the first few weeks obviously were very intense, and I was feeling a lot of things about parenthood and, looking after a tiny baby. But I know that I missed those guys a lot.
Mm. Really, and presumably in the more the pregnancy progressed, the more you were seeing each other, with all of these midwife appointments and all of the scans and things.
And our WhatsApp group is the busiest WhatsApp group I've ever experienced, chatting constantly all day. And so really missed them. It was a terrifying experience driving on the motorway. Dan drove us, home on the motorway. Obviously Robin had quite a long journey for his first.
And I'm assuming he didn't speed on the way home, because most new parents taking a baby home from hospital, most precious cargo in the car ever.
Most precious cargo. He drove very, very slowly. I remember thinking, I'll sit in the back because, make sure I look after baby. And then I just couldn't stay awake because I've been up for so many hours. I did fall asleep on the way home. I'm not gonna lie, it was a really difficult couple of weeks. We weren't ready at home. We missed those guys. We had become parents for real after 9 years. It's exactly what we wanted, but it was incredibly intense. I would say, looking back, that feels like a million years ago. And I feel like a very confident parent. Not very confident, because all of us are amateurs, right?
But
I feel like a much more confident parent today. And Dan and I are having a shared parental leave, really, of several months. It's been really special. The day we're talking about, his birthday, feels like a really, really, really long time ago, even though it was only 20 weeks. I just feel one of the luckiest people on earth, I think, you know, having felt so unlucky for so long, Renna and Alex walked into our lives and upended all that.
Yeah. So the if went to a when and is now a now.
It's very much a now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it was without its, you know, struggles in terms of that grief that I feel that I didn't carry him and I can't breastfeed him and all of those things.
Yeah.
And that sometimes manifests in like me being a bit of like I have moments of like being a hyper anxious mother and like trying to kind of almost overcompensate, I suppose. But, you know, Dan and I are talkers and we talk all that through. I wouldn't be a mum without Renna. And I love having the opportunity to experience all of the highs and lows yeah. of this early period that we've had so far. Renna and Alex were the very first people to learn Robin's name because they had to register him under current UK law. And so we saw them on his 13th day alive. So we went back to 2 weeks later and back to the Midlands so that that we could be there as Renna and Alex registered Robin. And we gave them his name in an envelope and we had a little pub lunch and Alex surprised us with Prosecco. And that was the day 13 was the day when I thought, oh, I can get out of crisis mode now. Like, this could be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a kind of emerging term, matrescence, that thing of that transition into parenthood, whatever way you do it. But that, you know, as you said, Helen, we're all amateurs. We're all amateurs when it comes to parenting. But there is that huge transition when we go from not being parents to being parents. And I think it's a shock for most people. But, you know, this for you, like, a, you know, significantly more levels to it.
I wonder, and I'm keen to kind of talk to other intended parents in the community. I wonder if other first time parents through surrogacy feel this way. I wonder if they do. I don't know. Like I say, I've got nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
Our boiler also broke that week and the heating was off and my mum and dad were on holiday and there was things that went wrong that week as well that you know made it a challenging
first. life things
but yeah, I suppose my matrescence hit me like a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just the way it had to happen, really, because I was holding my heart.
Yeah.
What's the phrase? I didn't believe.
Yeah.
I didn't believe.
Yeah.
No. And that, so, you can definitely see that, yeah.
I, as a doula and as a postnatal doula, I am very, very familiar with working with new parents right from when their babies come into the world. Not necessarily having been with them through pregnancy or birth, and helping people to become confident in their skills as a parent, helping them to adapt, helping them to transition, helping them to, you know, think about all of those things that come with having a new baby. I wonder now, with the benefit of hindsight, Helen, what additional support would have been really beneficial for you and Dan in those first 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus weeks?
I felt very well supported by my friends, I have to say. When we realized that we weren't coping, lots of people showed up with food. I must credit our local friends for filling our freezer with food. I'm not sure is the answer. We didn't have a doula for this experience. I would say that, you know, for parents about to become parents like I am, I would say just have a dialogue with yourself about what your level of belief. You know, there's nothing that Renna and Alex could have done differently. You know, when the baby kicked and we were in the room, Renna stopped what she was doing and grabbed our hands to make sure that we would feel the baby kicking. You know, there was nothing more that those guys could have done.
No.
I feel like, yeah, maybe a bit more reflection for me about that my level of belief in the situation.
It sounds to me like a level of emotional support. So, you know, I often talk about there being sort of three aspects to doula support, and that being emotional, practical, and information. And, you know, new parents need all of those things in different degrees. But, you know, what I'm hearing is a massive processing of emotions of shock, of grief, of surprise, of complete, you know, disbelief that this has even happened, you know, and yeah, I'm just intrigued. And of course, your partner, Dan, is just the most magical human being. And going through his own whole journey as well. I'm just intrigued, you know, for those listening to this and thinking about like how might somebody who's just had a baby by surrogate, what support might they need? What could be useful?
I would say very similar probably to any new parent, but with, you know, additional you know, a backstory of, you know, bit more of a dramatic infertility tale, right?
So
support with the right ways to bond with baby, maybe, you know, surrogacy giving us information about, you know, all the kind of co-bathing, co-wearing, you know, all of the kind of, you know, bonding as a non-gestational parent. So that was really, really helpful.
Yes.
For us. Yeah, I'm struggling to answer this question because I don't know, maybe it's too recent, but things you're describing, Sophie, sound really helpful. And I'm sure, like, you know, other you know, experts like yourself listening to this will have to write in on a postcard.
Yeah. And Renna, is there anything else that you would like to add in terms of the sort of the post-birth period for you as the surrogate?
I think that Helen and Dan were fantastic post-birth, because one thing I always say as a surrogate is we miss them terribly. Mm. And I adore Robin. And I know that we'll have a very special relationship while he grows up. But the people I missed were Helen and Dan. Yeah. They're the people that you form the bond with. And this is, you know, this is never your baby. You're giving the baby back to its parents. And so for me, the people that I met were the people that, you know, I love. And so Helen and Dan would send us baby pictures, baby with all different friends and relatives, and just really making us feel included in that. And I think for me as well, a big part of it for me was to express. I felt really that that's something I really wanted to do. So expressing post-birth was me and my hormones. And also, I wanted to talk about the birth and everything over and over and over. And I think everyone allowed me that space to do that, because I think I was also processing. And I was also coming to terms with, you know, what was classed as, by the point that they realised I was in labour, what was classed as a 4-minute labour was incredibly intense, with lots of things that maybe didn't go the way I thought. So having that support from not just my friends and family outside of SUK, but within SUK as well, I did have an awful lot of that. And sometimes I'm a bit wary, surrogates, about saying, oh, I'm struggling, because everyone seems to always want to go to, are you struggling because the baby's not here? And that's really never, ever the case. It might be that your hormones are doing something, or I'm missing Helen and Dan, or I'm just struggling to get used to the fact that, you know, I'm no longer pregnant and I thought I would be. And so I think that it comes with so much, but I think I was really open and honest about how I was feeling, and that made a really big impact, because then people could support and could help. And I think we've always been really good at that as a team. Helen and Dan, I want them to say when they were finding things tricky and not feeling that they had to say that everything was beautiful, because we've always been very open and honest that parenthood is blooming hard work.
Yeah.
And you're going to have your highs and lows. But I think because we all shared that, Helen and Dan said when they'd had tricky times, and we said when we did. So it really did help. And I think now we're all at a place where we've all definitely processed those early weeks. But our life goes back to normal with our three children and our life, whereas Helen and Dan's is
changed
beyond
ever.
Belief. Yeah, changed forever. I think it's been really nice to have friends that understood, and we just supported each other, as we've done every step of the way.
Yeah. Oh my God, I feel like we could carry on talking for hours. This is just, you've blown my mind, both of you. This has just been such a joyous conversation. Before we close, is there anything that you really wish people knew about surrogacy?
Wow, good question.
I say that I would want people to know that it's possible, that it can be joyful. Doesn't have to be shitty option B.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't have any role models. You know, I didn't know anyone in the community before we joined. And I'm trying really hard to be that for us, for a couple of other people who are a bit sort of on the edge of the organization and scared to join. So I'd want people to know that it happens in the UK. The altruistic rather than commercial model works with the right people, that the risks are low with the right strong bonded friendships, and that intended parents are not wealthy folk like Kim Kardashian, you know. I work for a charity and I live in an ordinary house. We cannot put up the full family when they come and visit, that kind of house. And it's possible, and we made it happen, and it could happen for you.
Yeah, I love that. And how about you, Renna?
Just that I think I just wish people knew how wonderful it is and how amazing and the wonderful people we've met along the way, and that the reason why surrogates do this purely comes down to because we can and because we want to help. I just wish people realize that there's so much magic to be had around it, and the friendships that you make and that you will continue to make. Joining SUK in 2018 is by far one of the best things I have ever done. And I'm just so glad that I met somebody that introduced me to this organization, because we always say to Helen and Dan and our first team, I wish I had necessarily met them in those circumstances, but I'm so glad that surrogacy led us to them.
Definitely.
Absolutely. How can people find out more about you or about surrogacy? What's the best way of getting in contact?
If you have a look, Google, and you can go into our organisation. It's called Surrogacy UK. We have a fantastic website which gives you loads of information about joining as an intended parent, joining as a surrogate. It gives you information about the reasons why you might want to join, and there's all the application forms that you can do on there, but there's a wealth of information on the website. And so it's Surrogacy UK is the organization that we're with, and if you want any more information, I'd highly recommend that.
And there's a podcast section on that website which really helped Dan and I as we were learning about things, and really to understand, you know, the whole experience from somebody else's perspective, you know, was really helpful as we joined, because if you're listening to a podcast, you clearly love podcasts.
Oh, thank you both so much for coming to join me. I really appreciate it, and I wish you all so well, and big hug to little baby Robin.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you've got any questions or any feedback, don't hesitate to come back to us. It's info@nurturingbirth.co.uk. And do follow us on social media @nurturing_birth on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. Please do give us a review if you've enjoyed this episode. We are on Spotify, we're on Apple, and we would love to hear your thoughts about any future episodes you'd like to hear. So do get in touch. Thanks for listening. Bye.